नावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। समस्तजनकल्याणे निरतं करुणामयं नमामि चिन्मयं देवं सद्गुरुं ब्रह्मविद्वरं सद्गुरुं ब्रह्मविद्वरम्। ॐ आप्यायन्तु ममाङ्गानि वा प्राणचक्षुश्रोत्रमथ बलमिन्द्रियाणि च सर्वाणि। सर्वं ब्रह्म औपनिषदं माहं ब्रह्म निराकुर्याम् मामा ब्रह्म निराकरोत् अनिराकरणमस्त्वनिराकरणमेस्तु। तदात्मनि निरतेय उपनिषत्सु धर्माः ते मयि सन्तु ते मयि सन्तु। शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। लेट्स चैंट द सेकंड मंत्र टुगेदर। श्रोत्रस्य श्रोत्रं मनसो मनो यत् वाचो ह वाचं स उप्राणस्य प्राणः। चक्षुश्च चक्षुरतिमुच्य धीराः प्रेत्यास्मा लोकात् अमृता भवन्ति। सो दिस उपनिषद स्टार्ट्स विद द स्टूडेंट आस्किंग the teacher that how does the mind alight on objects, how does it fall on upon objects, what causes the mind to move into that, and also what makes the eyes, the ears function, what makes the pranas get the energy, and how does the mind also. So basically he is asking for sense organs, organs of action, that is the speech, and then the pranas, and the mind, which is the antakarana. So all of those he is asking, and he knows that this equipment is inert, this all our equipment is inert, cannot survive by itself, so there has to be a power which is enervating, which is energizing this this whole assembly of this, what is our, what we call as our body. And and also he wants to know, what is my relationship with this, whatever is the enervating factor, energizing factor, what is my relationship with that factor. So last week we had done part of shloka number 2, most of it, where the teacher tells that it is, what is energizing is not an object, because objects are perishable. Whatever you can see perishes, and it has guna, kriya, it has all the activities, certain qualities, but this atma, which is energizing, has neither any guna, no activity, kriya, no relationship, no jati and no rudi, and has no particular classification, because atma is alone by itself, and it is nirvishesha, without any qualities. And then also we have studied that our attention is most of the time on nama rupa, name and form, and we ignore the substratum. Just as in a movie, our attention is on the movie, not on the white screen. Nobody goes to the movie to see the white screen. Soon as the movie ends and the white screen comes, we leave. So same way, this consciousness is neglected or ignored by most people, because they don't feel the need to know what is the use of knowing this Brahman that cannot be described by speech, that eyes cannot see it, senses cannot know it, mind cannot think about it. Then what is the use of that? So teacher says, it is you. then student thinks you means I am this body, mind. So how can I be that? Then if teacher says it is consciousness, then he says, how can I know this consciousness? Is there a way to know consciousness? So all these questions arise and the teacher is explaining, and in the subsequent shlokas, he will also explain. And he says this assembly is not for the body, but for the indweller in the body, which in second chapter, Bhagwan calls Dehi, the indweller. And that is the one that is using this, and that is the prompter of this activity. So now that we had not covered the last line, which is Dhiraha, that who is this Dhiraha in the third line? And then Pretyasma Loka Damrita Bhavati. And one who Ati Muchya Dhiraha, once you can detach from this body and this identification with the body, then you can progress towards immortality. And he says, Pretyasma, having given up this body, the person becomes immortal. And we had thought, studied that it is not giving up the body, but we'll talk about what is this immortality that the teacher is mentioning. So dhiraha has many meanings. Dhi one means intellect. So the one who is intelligent, whose intellect is able to think correctly. Then dhiraha in the Upanishads, it is described as dhiram rati vishebhyaha iti dhiraha. So vishebhyaha means from the objects. So what happens is our mind and intellect is always under the clutches of objects. We are fascinated with objects. We want to possess objects. So we do all that. So one who is able to unclutch, you know, just as a clutch in the car, you know, attaches you to the gear. So same way, our mind is clutched into objects. So one who is not fascinated by objects, and Bhagavan Sri Krishna in the second chapter says, Matra sparshastu kaunteya shitoshna sukha dukha daha agama apaino nityaha tans titikshasva bharata. So he says, sense objects, matra sparshastu, the senses, when they contact the objects, what happens? These objects give us heat and cold, joy and sorrow, success and failure. And constantly we are under the pair of these opposites, under the pair of opposites. So, and how do we overcome them? So he says, Bhagavan says, agama apaina, they are coming and going. And they should have, we should have titiksha. Because in life, things are not always going to go well. There will be problems, difficulties. But one who has titiksha, forbearance, is able to tolerate this pair of opposites. And such a person who has titiksha, that is another definition of dhira. So one who is not attached to objects, one who has forbearance in the presence of problems. Then there is another definition given by Kalidasa. Kalidasa was one of the greatest, actually considered to be the greatest Sanskrit poet ever lived. And they said once there was a gathering of scholars and they were trying to list all the Sanskrit poets, the greatest Sanskrit poets. So they all agreed that Kalidasa is number one. And then they said, who is number two? And they couldn't come up with number two because there was nobody even close to. So they didn't have a number two. They said, we only have number one, and that is Kalidasa. That's how great he was. So he actually, there is a Sanskrit saying which he says, Vikar hetau sati vikriyante yesham na chetasi sa iti dhiraha. So what is a dhiraha? One who is not disturbed, even when circumstances come that disturb others. You know, like in life, there will be disturbances and majority of the people will get disturbed by that, whether it's weather, whether it's physical illness, whether it's mental stress, whether it's failure or success. But the one who is not disturbed when everybody else will get disturbed, and even there is reason to be disturbed, and if he is still not disturbed, that is dhiraha. So that is another meaning of. So dhira has many meanings. And they say that what is the relationship of the body to the Atma? Because that was again one of the questions. So they say that the life, we should live on two planes, two different planes. One is the transactional plane and one is the absolute plane. So transactional plane are all these objects, whatever I can see, hear, smell, taste, touch, is at the transactional plane. And those things are always changing. That's why they say that objects that are in this world are constantly changing. And then there is the absolute level, which is the substratum, which is never changing. So in the worldly situation, when we see objects, what happens? What do we deal with objects with karmas? So karmas, actually our rishis were so amazing. Everything they could describe into 3-4 and fit everything. So they said karmas can do 4 things: apyam, utpadyam, vikaryam, and samskaryam. So karma, one is apyam, means I can get what I don't have. Say I don't have a car, so I go out and buy a car. So that is apyam. Then utpadyam means to create. So say the lady of the house wants to make dosa, so she'll get, you know, chawal and dal and, you know, blend them and then do all that, put ghee and all and make it. So that is utpadyam, where you collect 3, 4, 5 things and you make something new. Or like in a factory, you know, where you get steel, iron, plastic, wood and all, and you make a product. So that is utpadyam. Then vikaryam means modify, change it. So same thing, like you get mud, and then from that mud, you create a pot. So that is vikarya, where the mud has been changed into a pot. And it appears different. You know, mud is brown, pot is colored, and, you know, there are qualities. The pot may be harder and all that. And then fourth is samskarya, means to purify. So how do we purify? Like when we get gold ore, you know, from the mine, the gold is mixed with dirt and, you know, it looks brown, looks very ugly, and you can't even tell it is gold, except the people who are experts and the miners know it. So what they do, they melt the gold, heat up that whole complex so much that the gold melts and separates and the dirt separates. So that is samskarya, where the dirt has been removed and gold has been created. But Atma can be neither of those four. Can I apyam? Can I get Atma? No, because Atma is there all the time. The consciousness is all the time. Can I utpadyam? Can I create it from 4 or 5 different components? No, Atma is one and it is non-dual. Can I modify it? No, because it is avyayam. Atma or Brahman or consciousness, they are all different names. It is not vikaryam because it cannot be modified. It is avyayam. And can it be samskaryam? Can it be purified? No, because it is already pure. So that is the difference. So they say that one should work at 2 levels, the transactional level and the absolute level. And the best example of that is this, what we always chant, asatoma, satgamaya, tamasoma, jyotir gamaya, mrityorma, amritam gamaya. We say, oh, I know that. I've heard it many times. I know what is untruth to truth. But if we look at the depth of that mantra, it has the essence of all the teaching. So from asata, take me to sat. So asat means unreal, means temporary. What is temporary, which means the whole universe, according to this mantra, is unsat, asat, because whatever is temporary, changing, is unreal, asat. And from that, you take me to sat. Sat means which is ever existing, never changes in the past, present, and future. So from the temporary, take me to the permanent, from the unreal to the real. So from the transactional, may I go to the absolute plane? And how do we do that? It will come in subsequent shlokas also, subsequent mantras of this Upanishad. Then tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, take me from darkness to light. So darkness here represents ignorance. This, we are all alpagnya, we are all ignorant. We have very limited intelligence. And Bhagavan is sarvagnya. He knows everything of all beings in all the universes, whatever is happening. So this consciousness knows. So from ignorance, take me to knowledge, from darkness to light. So again, from the transactional plane, may I go to the absolute plane. And mrityorma amritam gamaya. Mrityu, take me to immortality. And what is mrityu? Mrityu again is this world of change. Because everything here will die. Day will perish and night will come. Then night will perish, day will come. Childhood will perish, youth will come. Youth will go perish, middle age, old age. So everything is changing. So what is unchanging is the Atma, which we had talked last week also, that from childhood to youth and old age, there is one entity that is known to us. And so they say body is bound to go anywhere, anyway, you know, so don't worry too much about it. But this is not something you should be telling others when somebody else is sick. You don't say, you know what, your body is bound to go anyway, so don't. That is for us, for me. So Vedanta is, I mean, if somebody has studied Vedanta and he is asking, that's different. But generally, it is for me that if anything happens to the body, I have to say body is bound to go anyway. Don't take too much care of it. Don't spend too much time. So that is dhiraha, and that is immortality. And so immortality, they say, after death, this person, pretyasma loka amrita bhavanti, these people become immortal after death. So then Gurudev in his commentary says it very beautifully, that if it were to happen after death, then there would be no realized master available to teach us, because the person had to die to attain immortality. You know, so otherwise, how did Gurudev and Swami Vivekananda and all of these masters stay and teach us? So they say after the death of the ego, the idea that I am the body, that has to perish. The body doesn't have to perish, but the idea that I am the body and I perish when the body perishes. That's why Bhagavad Gita also, second chapter, Bhagavan says, Na jayate mriyate va kadachit. You neither die nor you were ever born. So that is the Atma, and that is called Kutastha. Kutastha means the anvil. So on the blacksmith in the olden days, when they used to make horseshoes and all, they would have an anvil which was unchanging, on which the metal was hammered to create different metal like plates and spoons and horseshoes and so on. But the anvil on which it was hammered was unchanging. So it's changeless. So same way this Atma is changeless. And on that, all our changes are happening. So either you identify with the changing world or you identify with the Atma, then you are not affected by other changes. They will come and go. That's why Bhagavan says, Agama apaino anityaha tanstitikshasva bharata. Then you have forbearance. Kutastha, I was listening somewhere. He says some of the students are like that, kutastha, that they'll go to the guru, stay for 1 year, 2 years, and after all the hammering of the guru, they still remain the same, unaffected. He says, like anvil, the guru can do whatever he wants. So he says that is not the kutastha we should be. We should be that. So dhira we talked about. And what is immortality? We talked about that. So the second shloka is finished. We can chant the
mantra number three.
Ambika, you want to chant? Natatra chakshur gachati.
Na tatra chakshur gacchati.
Na va gacchati.
Na va gacchati.
नो मनः
नो मनः
न विद्मः
न विद्मः
न विजानीमः
न विजानीमः
यथैतदनुशिष्यात्
यथैतदनुशिष्यात्
अन्यदेव तद्विदितात्
अन्यदेव तद्विदितात्
अथो अविदितात् अधि
अथो अविदितात् अधि
इति शुश्रुम पूर्वेषाम्
इति शुश्रुम पूर्वेषाम्
येनस्तद्व्याच चक्षिरे
येनस्तद्व्याच चक्षिरे.
So, but the teacher is continuing to his continuing to expand on the second shloka, where he says that na tatra chakshu gacchati. Now this atma or this consciousness, teacher is explaining more because he feels that this topic in the second mantra, even though it is complete, as we have said, for a Uttama Adhikari, the second mantra would be enough. He would not need any more explanation. But most of us, we need further explanation, and teacher knows that. So he says, Na tatra chakshuhu gacchati. There, chakshuhu, the eye does not go. He's using eye as a singular. That means vision. You cannot see it. Na tatra chakshu gacchati. The eye does not go there. Na vak gacchati. Na vak means speech. So speech does not go there. No manaha. Even the mana, na mana becomes no manaha, does not go there. So the eyes cannot see, the speech cannot describe it, the mind cannot know it. He says, okay, then teacher, do you know what it is? Okay, my eyes don't know my speech. He says, na vidmaha, we do not know it either. So he says, you don't know. He says, na. And na vijani maha, and we don't even have a clear idea of what it is. So he says, you don't know and you don't have an idea. He said, not only that, yat etad anushishyat. This is something which I cannot teach you. So he says, I came here, I spent whole 1 year. Pehle bolna tha, you know, when I first came, I wasted my whole 1 year and I thought you were a, you know, great guru, people had told us. And after 1 year, you are telling that you don't know it and you don't even have any idea and you cannot even teach me, person like me. He says, I cannot teach a person like you. Anyat eva tad viditat atho aviditat adhi. And viditat means anyat eva. It is different from, viditat means the known. So it is different from the known, tatha and aviditat adhi, and it is above the unknown. So it is different from the known, it is different from the unknown. So teach student says, you know, it's time for me to leave. Because first of all, he said he doesn't know how to teach me. Then he says that it is, it is beyond the known, beyond the unknown, then why am I wasting my time? Let me go find some other guru. So guru says, no, wait, sit down. There is one method which we have learned. He says, what? Iti shushruma purvesham. This is what we have heard from our guru who came before us. So it can be taught. Ye nastad vyacha chakshire. This is how it has been taught to us. So there is a method called Guru Shishya Parampara, which this knowledge can be passed on. So he says, oh, okay, it can be passed on. He says, yeah. And I will use that same method which the teacher used. So why does he say that it cannot be taught? And we'll talk about that. Because remember, he said it is eye of the eye, the mind of the mind in the second mantra. So it is different from the eye. Eye of the eye is different from the eye. Mind of the mind is different from the mind. So the eye, the mind, they are all substance. They are all objects, but this is the knower of the objects. It is consciousness, because these indriyas are inert. These eyes are inert. The mind is inert. It is only in the presence of consciousness that it is energized. And Gurudev in his commentary talks beautifully about the telescope. That in a telescope, the telescope, somebody, the seer who is operating the telescope, through the telescope, using it, he can see all the stars, the planets, you know, distant galaxies. But the telescope cannot see him. See, telescope cannot see the human. So same way, this consciousness can, it knows all that, knows the state of the mind, knows the state of the senses. But the mind and senses cannot know the consciousness, just as a, so they are the telescope. And the consciousness is the seer. So the, you need a live person. The telescope itself is inert. You need an intelligent person. And having seen it and having understood it, then what happens is it creates an intuition. Knowledge cannot, it's not an object. He says, when I cannot teach you, means I cannot teach you as an object of knowledge. So it is not something I can communicate to you, because communication can only happen in words. And he said, no, no, vak gachati, speech cannot go there. So in speech, I cannot describe it. But when you listen to the teacher and you read the Upanishads and then you meditate on it, there arises this intuition, which is beyond the mind, beyond the intellect. So in my meditation, in my study, the teachings take us to that which is beyond the mind, that which is behind the mind. Behind does not mean physically. But so as I become a sakshi and witness the mind, witness the intellect, witness this body, then slowly I'm coming closer to that truth. So that understanding that develops, it is called intuition. And as they said, you know, it has no qualities. And then he says that which is beyond the known and beyond the unknown. So what do they mean by that which is beyond the known and beyond the unknown? So known is, again, what we see in the waking and dream, that is known. But what you experience in your deep sleep, do you know that? Nobody knows, right? What is my experience in deep sleep? Nothing. I knew nothing. That's why I said I had a beautiful sleep. I slept 7 hours, you know, what they say, you know, slept like a log. On the other hand, if somebody is disturbed and moving around, he says, oh, I didn't have a good sleep. So when you are in deep sleep, you do not know that. So what is known is the waking and the dream. I know my waking state. I know my dream state, what I am experiencing. But in the deep sleep, I do not know that. So the deep sleep is unknown. The waking and the dream is known. So they say the consciousness is present in all three states. That's why the most famous shloka that we should use for meditation is Prata Smarami. I think some of you may have heard it. If not, you should look it up on YouTube or on Google. So it says Prata Smarami Ridhi Sanskurdatva Tattvam Satchit Sukham Paramhams Gatim Turiyam Yat Swapna Jagara Sushuptama Vaiti Nityam Tad Brahma Nishkalamaham Nacha Bhuta Sangaha. So he says, in the morning, I remember that which is enlivening in my heart, which is enlivening all this equipment, Sanspurdhatva Tattvam, and that is Sat Chit Sukham. It is the Sat Chit and Anand and Paramahams Gatim, and all the wise saints seek it, and they have reached it, this state, which is in our heart, which is the closest thing to us. And it is the Turiyam. It is the Chaturtham Manyante. Mandukya Upanishad says, Turiyam is the fourth state. It's not really a state, but it is that condition of that consciousness in which all the other three states are contained in that, emerge from that, the waking, dream, and deep sleep, are supported by this Turiyam. And Swapna Jagara Sushuptama Vaiti Nityam. And this consciousness knows my waking, my dream, and my deep sleep. Nityam, it is constant in all three. And that Brahma, partless Brahman, I am, Shankaracharya ji says, I am that Brahman, not this Bhut Sangha. No, I'm not this collection of five elements, but I am that consciousness. So that is a very beautiful shloka to meditate on. Prata Smarami, if you can. Another meaning of known and unknown is that, so I ask everybody here, do you know English? They say, yes, I know English. Do you know Russian? No, I don't know Russian. Do you know that you know English? Of course, I know that I know English. Do you know that you do not know Russian? Yes, I know that I do not know Russian. So that which is beyond the known and the unknown, it is neither the known nor the unknown. It's neither what I know and neither what I do not know. So that which is the knower of the unknown is not the unknown. That which is the knower of the known is not the known, right? So it is beyond the known and the unknown. So there are two explanations for this, that this is neither the known nor the unknown. And what is the origin of that? This, you know, he talks about the Guru Shishya Parampara that we have, that I had learned from my teacher and my teacher learned from his teacher and so on. He says, what is the origin? So we always chant, you know, Sada Shiva Samarambham, Shankaracharya Madhyamam, Asmadacharya Paryantam, Vande Guru Paramparam. So he says, Sada Shiva, Lord Shiva is the origin. And then, you know, other places they say Krishna is the Jagat Guru, whoever your Devta is, so Ishta Devta. So Sada Shiva Samarambham and Shankaracharya Madhyamam. And in between the Lord Shiva is Bhagwan Shankaracharya ji, whom we consider an avatar of Lord Shiva. And then Asmad, then Shankaracharya Madhyamam, Asmadacharya Paryantam, and then our Acharya, like Puja Gurudev, is after him. And I prostrate to the Vande Guru Paramparam. So I prostrate to the Guru Shishya Parampara, which starts from Lord Shiva, then Bhagwan Shankaracharya ji, and then Puja Gurudev. So that's why it is said that when he says it, we have learned from our guru, but he traces it back to the Supreme Lord. Or in Dakshinamurti Stotram, you know, it is Dakshinamurti. Again, that's Lord Shiva incarnation. That is the first guru. And that gives the knowledge to the Sanat Kumaras. And that's how the knowledge was transmitted. So what they say that this knowledge is self-evident. I am that, aham, aham, aham. You know, Raman Maharishi again and again says, I am that. And whatever is in this visible world is martyam, dukhatmakam, and heyam. So martyam means it is perishable. It is dukhatmakam, it will give sorrow and it should be given up. So he says everything that is perishable should be given up. We say, yeah. He says, yeah, but food is perishable, right? Food is martyam, so should I give up food? And no, and then food is dukhatmakam, right? If I don't have food, I get sorrow. If I have too much food, I get sorrow. Dukhatmakam, and so heyam, so should be given up. No, what they say is that at the transactional plane, when you are hungry, you eat food. And they say hunger cannot be satisfied by inquiry. Like if somebody is hungry and he says, oh, I'm hungry, to the guru, you know, is there any food in the ashram? Guru says, to whom is the hunger? He says, to me. He says, inquire, who are you? You know, Raman Maharishi. So he said, inquire into what is the source of the hunger. He said, I don't want, I want food. So when you are hungry for the transactional purpose, you will need food. Inquiry will not satisfy your hunger. But heya means one should not give too much importance to food and these things. Importance should be to the Atma, the consciousness, and that is me, that is self-evident. And there's a beautiful story of a king. I'll tell this story, and then if I have time, we can do the next mantra. So there was this king, some of you may have heard it, there was this king who had a beautiful, huge palace, and in the palace about one quarter or so was only his personal quarters, huge, many rooms, bedrooms, and then the other part was where all the servants, the guards, all the other people lived in the other section. And he had the one door entering, and he had very strict instruction: if the door is locked, nobody is supposed to disturb me. So, you know, they all followed, and they would wait till he opened the door in the morning. And then behind that, his own room, there was a beautiful garden, and there was a door leading out to the garden, and he would go there and spend time in the evening listening to music or, you know, reading or just enjoying. And then he liked to have his wine a little bit. So he would take his wine, have a glass of wine or, you know, some alcohol, and he would enjoy the evening. One day he was going through a very stressful time. There was some neighboring king was threatening to attack, and he was worried. And also he took a bottle of wine with him. And he was under so much stress that to satisfy the stress, he kept on drinking, 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 and finished almost the whole bottle. And by now he was in a very, you know, he was basically out, you know, he was basically drunk. And as he left that door got locked, you know, from the garden to his palace, the door got locked. And then it started raining heavily, and in the garden there was no shelter, and heavy rain started falling. His crown, his clothes, his body was completely drenched, and there was mud and muck on the ground. His shoes got dirty, his, you know, robe got dirty, and he was drunk. And as he was walking towards the door, he fell down on his face. His face, his whole body was in the muck, and the rain kept on coming, and he started crying because... And he started banging on that door, you know, to get back into that. And obviously the servants were told not to come in the other section. So they were far away. And he kept banging, banging, banging. And all night he was crying. And finally he fell asleep, all sad and miserable, tears down his face, clothes dirty, body, all that mess. So in the morning, the servants were waiting for him to open the door. You know, he used to usually open around 7 in the morning, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock. The door didn't open. So they said, you know, I hope the king is all right. And normally he doesn't take so long. So then the head guard had a key, and the instruction was only to open in emergency. They say, sir, it looks like it's an emergency. So he brings the key, and with great fear, they open the lock. And they find his rooms are all empty. They say, where could he be? And then they see the door leading out to the garden. And so they were able to open the door from the inside. And they find him lying on the ground and all tear-stained, mud on his face, all his clothes, mud and all. So they finally shake him. Your Highness, are you okay? Are you okay? And he wakes up and he's still crying. And he says, you know what? Whole night I was banging and you guys didn't open. They said, sir, you had told us not to come in this section and we couldn't hear it. It was far away. He said, but whole night I was sleeping here and suffering in the rain. They said, sir, why were you suffering? The key is in your pocket. The key to open the door is in your pocket. And you always have it and you always use it. He said, oh, I was so drunk, I didn't even remember. And I suffered the whole night and I cried. The key to his happiness was in his pocket. All he had to do was take out the key, open the door, and he could get out of the rain, get into his beautiful palace, sleep comfortably in his own bed. but he didn't do that. So same way, you and I have the key to our happiness in our pocket, which is the Atma, the consciousness, which is always with us. Just as with him, the key was always with him. So we always have the key of happiness in our own pocket with us, but not knowing it, not recognizing, because we are drunk. We are drunk with what? The Maya. The ignorance of Maya makes us drunk. And so we don't know that we have happiness with us. And so we suffer all the problems of the world, not knowing that I have the solution with me, myself. Yes. So that is the essence of this story. And that is shloka number 3. Yeah. Mantra number 3.
Netaji, I would like to share something.
Sure.
You just mentioned about Kalidas and nobody is equivalent to his literally, you know, in intelligence and all.
Right.
There is a shloka about it. And before I tell the shloka, it is pertaining to the hand. This one is called Tarjani. This one is a Madhyama. The ring finger is called Anamika. And the last little finger is called Kanishthika. So right. This is pertaining to that Pura Kavinam Ganana Prasange Kanishthika Adhisthita Kalidasa Adhyapi Tat Tulyam Kaveh Abhavat Kaveh Abhavat Anamika Sarthavati Babhuva. So the name of this finger was Anamika, meaning there is no name to this finger. Because at Kanishthika, they're starting counting from the little finger. So they put Kalidas as a Mahavidwan on the last finger. And there was no comparable Vidwan found in those days. So they named this finger Anamika. So that is the story behind this shloka.
Thank you. I have heard that shloka. Thank you very much. I have heard that shloka, but I didn't know the exact wording. Yeah. So thank you for telling us. Yes,
you're welcome.
I heard of that. It was the little finger. Yes. And beyond that, there was no name. So they couldn't find
When you mentioned, I remembered that. So I said, I better find my shloka. I have a book of my, when I studied Sanskrit, I have all these shlokas. It's like 300 different shlokas that interest me. So one of those, I have it in my collection. So thank you so much.
Very nice. Yeah. Moini auntie, you have this book?
Not yet. And I'm going to have a surgery all in for next Tuesday. So I might not be attending, but I will get the book.
Sure. Okay. So Moini auntie, you can read, please. Follow me on 4th mantra. You can unmute. Time hai. We have 15 minutes. I can finish it. Yeah. There's not much discussion. We can, Ye yat vacha nabhyuditam.
Yat vachana abhyuditam.
Yena vag abhyudyate.
Yena
vag abhyudyate.
Tadeva brahmatvam vidhi.
Tadeva brahmatvam.
Auntie, go ahead. Tadeva brahmatvam vidhi.
Tadeva brahmatvam vidhi.
Nedad yadidam upasate.
Nedam yadidam upasate.
Right. Yad idam upasate. Yeah. So, yat vacha anabhyutitam means with speech it cannot be described. So we have already talked about that. And yena vak abhyudyate, that because of which the speech is enlivened. So speech cannot describe it, but it is the one that is enlivening speech. And why is he repeating? Because now he's bringing a new idea. Tat eva, that alone is Brahman. See, until now, he has not used the word Brahman, not used the word Atma. We have been using it. The teacher has just said tat, that. So now he is giving a name to that, which is Brahman and Tvam Vidhi, and you should know that. And what is Brahman? Not idam, yat, idam upasate, not this what you are worshipping in the temple. That is not Brahman. So teacher is making it clear that the form is not Brahman, whether it's Sri Ram, Sri Krishna, Mother Durga, that is none of them are Brahman that you worship, but it is beyond that. So what he is, we'll talk about that. So that which speech cannot describe and which illumines the speech, we have covered that quite a bit. It is the Chaitanya, it is the consciousness. So I won't go into the detail of the first two lines, that it is the speech of the speech. And it is that which is enlivening speech. And speech cannot describe Brahman. Speech cannot describe Atman, even though the whole Upanishad, there are hundreds of Upanishads, but none of them can describe. They can only point, indicate. So that is what the meaning is. And we have talked about that. You said that eva brahma tvam vidhi, that alone is Brahman. So what it means is Brahman is alone. There is nothing Brahman plus anything else. No, Brahman eva alone is only one. And this universe is an illusory subject, which is the subject. And the universe is an illusion upon that Brahman. And that is what Tvam Vidhi, that you should know, we all should know. And that's what the whole Upanishad will continue, more mantras about pointing out the nature of Brahman. But Brahman, we already said, is non-dual, but the word Brahman means big. So they say big what? You know, big, like we say, okay, big brother, you know, okay, that is big. Or this room is there, and then there is a big hall, like in our mission, there is a classroom and then there is a hall. So hall is bigger than the room. So then bigger than the hall, is the mountain bigger than the hall? Yes, mountain is bigger. Then is California bigger than the mountain? Yes, California is bigger. Then is USA, then the earth, you know, then the universe. So we always say something big or a big boss, you know, like I am a clerk or secretary in the company, and then there is my big boss. So big can be in stature or like tall, who is taller, or it can be in age, can be in a relationship, can be in job, or can be in size, like the mountain. But what is Brahman? It is bigger than what? They say, no, it's not bigger than anything. It is the big. There is nothing, no description of big what, because there is nothing else except. So it is, that's why the Brahman word means big. All pervasive, it is everywhere, and it is the big. Again, that means bigger than everything. There is nothing else in comparison to that. So they say, then how about Rama Krishna? He says, na edam yad idam upasate. But is Bhagavan, Sri Ram, Sri Krishna, Mother Durga, that we worship. He says, that is not Brahman. So when the teacher is saying that is not Brahman, he's not trying to put down the idol. Because as Gurudev said, the idol will take us to the ideal. But what he's saying is that it is not Sri Rama, but it is the Ram Tattva. It is the essence of what Ram is. Or it's not Sri Krishna, it is the Krishna Tattva. Again, Krishna himself says, you know, when he says I and me, myself, in Bhagavad Gita, he doesn't mean I as the son of Devaki and Vasudev, but I as the Supreme Consciousness. So that's why whenever he says Aham, or that's why in the 11th chapter, he can show Arjuna all the Vishwarupa, all the planets and all the past, present and future, because he is that Supreme Consciousness. So when we worship Sri Rama or Krishna or Mother Durga or Lord Shiva or whoever, we are not only worshiping the form, we are worshiping the essence, that which this form represents. So they say the form should take you to the formless. That's why in Lord Shiva, we have his form sitting in meditation, and we have the Shiva Linga. Linga means the symbol. So that is the formless aspect. It indicates the formless. So that's what he says, that what you are worshipping, it's not that it should not be done. Because Gurudev says it very beautifully that the Bhakta and the Ishta Devta together are required. So through the, and Bhakti and Jnanam are the two wings of a bird, just as a bird can only fly with two wings. So the Jiva can fly with Bhakti and Jnanam. People who have Bhakti and have no knowledge, then they become fanatical or they become superstitious. One who has knowledge and he said, I don't believe in all this going to temple and praying and breaking coconut, that is all waste of time. Then that person, all will he will have is dry arrogance. Because bhakti is what brings juice, what brings love. Without love for God, your knowledge will be dry and will be arrogance. So that's why bhakti and jnanam are both required. So what the teacher is trying to tell us, that do not only focus on the form, but focus on the formless. Same thing in, I also have this form, but my essence is that formless. Just as there is Krishna Tattva, Rama Tattva, so Jiva Tattva also. Each one of us, our essence is that. And they say that when you look at the idol of Bhagwan, say Lord Sri Krishna, then that is Eka Rupa Ishwara, right? So that is one form of Sri Krishna. Then he says that one form is Anek Rupa Ishwara. Anek Rupa means that Krishna, Rama, Shiva, Mother Durga, they are all one. Anek Rupas. They are all one, many manifestations of that one. So Ek Rupa, Anek Rupa. Then the third one is Sarva Rupa, means everything that I see in this universe. Every are him, whether it's stones or plants or animals, birds, fish, inert or so. Ek Rupa, Anek Rupa, Sarva Rupa, and then the fourth one is Arupa. Arupa means formless. So these are progression. So from one form, you take to many forms, then you take to all forms of this universe, and then basically formless, which is beyond all forms. And all forms are supported in that. That's why Arjuna in the 12th chapter, he had asked, you know, Sri Krishna that which is superior, you know, form or formless. And Bhagavan says, Klesho adhik taras tesham, avyakta sakta chetasam, avyakta hi gatir dukham, deha vadbhira vapyate. So he says the form is easy to love and to connect with. It is more difficult to connect to the formless. It takes more effort. So from the form, I have to put effort to go. Form, I can easily see. Okay, I see the form in the temple. And then I have know all the stories of Sri Krishna, all his leelas, or Sri Ram's, you know, beautiful qualities, you know, all that. So that is easy to connect. And then the formless is klesha, is difficult. And especially for Deha Vadbhira Vapyate. If I think I am the body, then I have to connect with God as a form. I cannot say I have a form and God is formless. That cannot happen. I have to say I am also formless. Because when you say formless, that means there is no limit. When it is formless, has no limit. And when it is without limit, then I am also included in that. So I am also formless. So I have to understand that I am formless, then only I can understand God as formless. If I say I have this form, I am male, I am this, I am that, then it is more difficult for me. So that is the essence of this shloka, that what you see is Brahman and not what you worship in this, in the temple. Again, that means does not mean we should stop worshiping. In fact, you should have more attention to doing pujas and worship, because that purifies your mind and makes it single-pointed. And only with a pure single-pointed mind, you can get this knowledge of the Vedas and the Upanishads. So we'll end here. We have about 5 or 6 minutes, what we have covered today. We talked about dhira and what is immortality and what is it that is illumined by that. And that is not, is beyond the form, it is Brahman. And that is what has been taught to us by Guru Shishya Parampara. And it can only be transmitted from, you know, Shabda Pramana. That is the only one. And that has to be from a guru, has to indicate, and then I have to contemplate upon it. That's why Shravana, Manana, Nidhi, Dhyasana, he say, oh, I already know that. No, I have to contemplate on what the guru has said and then apply that into my life. So we have 5 minutes. Any questions, comments? Lata, yeah, go ahead.
So we are living both in the transactional plane and absolute plane.
Right.
But it's our understanding should be stay more in the absolute plane.
Right.
And yes. withdraw yourself from this transaction of right. attached with this particular BMI and this birth.
Absolutely.
Just knowingly that you, knowing. That you know this is a transactional plane, but act from the absolute like that.
Yeah, that my absolute nature is different from this. So when you chant Asatoma Sat Gamaya, don't do it mechanically.
Hmm.
Do it with understanding that from the transactional, may I go to the absolute. And being a Sakshi is one of the very good ways, constantly practicing the Sakshi Bhava, that watch what my mind is doing, watch what my body is doing, and be a witness of that.
Okay.
But that does not mean that you don't pay attention. In fact, you pay do it with more attention.
Yeah.
This mindfulness. But at the same time, is not me. And that very clearly it has to come, that this body is not me, it is my equipment.
So right now, if Dylan calls out for you, both of you need to go. That's what that means, right?
Yeah, that's
transactional plane.
Yeah, that's the transactional purpose. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
But the understanding should become clear. Yeah, Sharath, go ahead. You have a comment?
No, I have a question. Page 78, under two schools of crystallized thought, specifically the first one, where it says one of the schools proclaims that perfection cannot be achieved so long as we are living in this physical body. Can you expand on that, please?
Yeah, see, that is true. You know, I think last week also we had talked about it. It's only the imperfect man who can find place at the feet of the Lord. Because as long as you are in this BMI, the body is imperfect. You know, it's constantly changing. It's gets contaminated. One day you don't take a bath, the body starts smelling. The mind again is filled with negativities, impurities. The intellect again has confusions. So at the BMI level, it is impossible to become perfect. That's why they say even no matter who it may be, as long as they are in the body, they have to deal with the body's imperfections. So while I am functioning in the body, I understand that I am not the body. That is perfection. So continue to work in the body, but realize it's not me. And that is perfection. And that my nature is absolute. That is my true nature. And stay as much as possible, but the problems of the body will come. And the mind sometimes will get angry, will get upset. Even a Mahatma, you know, gets into, they are not always 100% perfect, 100% correct. You know, even a great Mahatma could make mistakes, you know, because that somebody may come and interpret that same Upanishad even better. So anything else, Neil, you want to add? I think that's what... Do you agree? What do you think, Sharath?
I think you have to look.
Let me see that actual. What page I
78. Page 78. It says, one proclaims that perfection cannot be achieved so long as we are living in this physical body.
Yeah,
I don't have any issues with the second portion, but the
what
first portion It seems contradicting, but I guess you have to really look into the absolute meaning of it in terms of the BMI, because oftentimes we've talked dozens of times about achieving liberation or moksha while we are living, not after we die or not after
which mantra is it? Because the edition I have is different.
Two, I believe. Two.
Mantra sincere. Number two?
Under sincere pursuit.
Yeah, because there's three different editions. What is the color of your book? Yeah, mine is different. We have, both of us have different, Neeru and I, in mantra number two.
Lata Ben has the same book. Maybe she can...
Yeah, when he's right, it's very confusing the way it's explained. Yes, 78, page number 78, 79. Maybe you can read up in that new book and next time explain to us. It's quite confusing what Sharad is asking.
And so can you repeat, why don't you repeat it? What exactly does it say?
So there are two schools of thoughts that they're talking about in terms of Vedanta. The first school of thought, it says, one proclaims that perfection cannot be achieved so long as we are living in this physical body. That's the first school of thought. That's where I'm second guessing myself. The second school of thought I don't have an issue with. It says a great mind can achieve perfection only by shedding the mortal coil. So whether you're talking about Maya or Samsara, you know, that's what I was talking about there. But the first portion, it's a little bit contradicting. I mean, to my understanding. Or limited understanding.
Okay, I'll try to find it and read it, but from just simple is that basically as long as you identify with the body, you will remain imperfect. Once you identify with the consciousness, then you say, I am perfect, but this body is not. So don't expect to have perfect actions, but the awareness, I'll try to find it in this particular volume. Right now I'm not able to, but I'll see if it is there in this.
I'll take a snapshot of it and send it to you.
Yeah, you can send it to me also, by text. I have two different editions. But yeah, just send me that page if you can, please. Okay, we'll close here. Thank you very much. We'll continue. Now the next few shlokas are repeat of what we did, that etad brahmatam tvam vidina etad idam upasate, that which you are worshipping is not Brahman, and he's kind of repeating the next few shlokas. So we'll end here. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harih Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harih Om. Thank you very much. Harih Om. Thank you for all your comments.